Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, Dee. It's the month of May.
Thank goodness, which is your favorite month of the year and pretty much mine, too.
Yes.
I'm so grateful for May. Shall we start with a quote? It's not about May, but it is about gardening.
You know what? Let's go for it.
Okay, this is probably one of my favorite quotes. Gardening is an active participation in the deepest mysteries of the universe. It's by Thomas Berry. Do you know who Thomas Berry is?
Ooh, I do know who Thomas Berry is because I just looked it up.
Well, why don't you tell everybody else who Thomas Berry is?
So Thomas Berry was a Catholic priest of the Passionist Order, a cultural historian, and an eco-theologian. He passed away in 2009. Very interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting.
If you look him up, you'll find a ton of interesting quotes.
Which we are going to kind of link to the website where you looked him up. But, you know, he didn't like to be called an eco-theologian. I'm not even sure what that is. He liked to be called a cosmologist, a geologian, or an earth scholar.
Very interesting. We'll have to... I've never heard of him before. I love the quote. I'm going to have to look him up and do some more reading. Thank you for sending me down another rabbit hole.
You are so welcome. You know, the thing is, I always use that quote in my talks because I'm like, you know, we should know a little bit about what we're doing if it's really an active participation in the deepest mysteries of the universe. And every time I get out there and garden, I do feel like I'm part of something bigger.
Yes, me too.
So before we go into what we're going to harvest and talk about this week, should we tell the people who don't know us very well a little bit about our backgrounds? Like, who are these two women and why are they talking about gardening?
Right. And we'll do that. And then next week, we'll tell everybody how we met, which somebody said, how did you ever meet somebody in Oklahoma to do a podcast? We'll save that for next week.
So, Carol, tell them about your pedigree.
Well, Dee, my pedigree, I guess, in the gardening world is I have a horticulture degree from Purdue University. Can I get a boiler up?
Boiler up.
And you, Dee?
Well, I have a journalism degree from the University of Oklahoma with an emphasis in botany because I liked life sciences, but I did not want to dissect cats. That's the truth. And so I went into botany, fell in love with it, and took every bit of botany I possibly could take. And I still love botany.
Well, that's good. I will assure you that getting my horticulture degree, I never had to dissect a cat.
Yeah, I like to work with plants and small insects better than animals. I'm not really an animal husbandry kind of person.
No, but going to Purdue and it is an agricultural school, I did have some friends that were in animal husbandry, majoring in chickens or cows or pigs or whatever.
I've kept chickens.
I know you have.
I kept chickens for about 20 years, and I might get them again, but I like to travel a lot, so I've been trying to pare down how many animals I have, and the bees are enough work. So for right now, no chickens for Dee, but maybe someday. What are you harvesting?
I am pulling radishes, pulling green onions, and I'm cutting the first of the lettuce crop. All delicious.
Well, that's kind of a coinkydink because guess what? My spinach isn't ready yet. It's very slow. And I'm harvesting lettuce, leaf lettuce, and green onions. I did not plant radishes. But let's just talk a little bit about those turnips that we're competing against.
My turnips look amazing.
Mine do too. They're starting to make little turnips, which I'm excited about. My husband came in the other day and he said, hey, you have a whole bunch of lettuce to harvest in that cold frame out there. And I said, there is no lettuce in that cold frame. There is. And he goes, yes, there is. And so we walked over and looked in the cold frame where I knew there wasn't any lettuce. But I had to prove it to him because he is who he is. And he looked down and he goes, see, lettuce. And I said, nope, those are turnips.
Turnips and lettuce leaves don't look all that much alike, Dee.
Bill is not a gardener.
But we should tell people, I mean, turnip greens, the leaves, are edible.
They are edible. Mine are kind of fuzzy, so you definitely want to cook them, but they are edible. I'm just going to eat the turnips when they come.
Well, but first we're going to have to take pictures and judge who has the best turnips.
Yeah. May the best turnip grower win.
And that is going to be me.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. Well, we weren't going to talk about turnips forever. We're going to go on to our flower D.
Yes, we have my favorite flower family this week. And guess what? I have another quote because people said they love our quotes. It's my favorite quote of all time, probably, and it's by my very favorite author, Ray Bradbury. And it says, "Bees do have a smell, you know, and if they don't, they should, for their feet are dusted with the spices from a million flowers."
Ooh, I like that.
I do too. So, what's our plant family this week, Carol?
The plant family this week is Compositae.
Compositae, which is also known as Asteraceae. How do you say that even? Asteraceae?
Asteraceae.
Ooh, I did it right. Compositae and Asteraceae. It's the same family, folks. It's also sometimes called the sunflower family. But today, we aren't exactly talking about sunflowers. We're talking about
daisies.
Daisies are wonderful plants. They are wonderful plants beloved by pollinators.
They are. And I got to tell you, I think daisies are kind of plain.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
all daisies?
I'm not as enthused about daisies as you are. But they're a fine flower.
Oh, well, I love daisies. In fact, I love everybody in the Compositae family. But daisies, I really like the perennial daisies, which are Leucanthemum times Superbum, known as Shasta daisies. And I have two favorite varieties. One is Becky, and Becky won the perennial plant of the year. And I can't remember the exact year, but it definitely won it. And then the other one is one put out called Banana Cream. And Banana Cream starts out yellow and eventually kind of fades to white. Becky is just a good, strong white daisy. And I love daisies because they feed all of my pollinators. They are sweet little flowers. They are no trouble at all. You can spread them around the garden. They are happy. But they don't take over like Rebecca.
No, they don't. And I have the Shasta daisies as well. I don't have Banana Cream, but maybe I want it.
You need it.
I do have just a plain Shasta daisy, and I'm going to guess that it's Becky out there. But to me, and I hate to disagree with you, Dee, because you're usually pretty smart about this gardening stuff. The Shasta daisy, it kind of blooms, and then I deadhead it, and I don't really get much more out of it. To me, it's like 2 weeks of bloom, and then goodbye.
Really?
Yeah.
It blooms about a month here. I wonder if it's because you're in Indiana and I'm in Oklahoma, because it blooms a long time here.
You know what? I won't swear that it's only 2 weeks, but maybe it's after 2 weeks. It's kind of so boring, I move on.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do your daisies flop?
No. They dare not.
Okay, then you probably do have Becky, because Alaska was an older cultivar, and Alaska does flop, but it has a thinner leaf too than Becky does. So I don't know. I mean, I have a few of the Alaska left, but I keep digging them up and sticking Becky in their place. I just think they look so great with other spiky plants, like all of the salvias and the sages. I think those behind the daisies or in front of the daisies, I think it looks really good.
We'll talk about salvias maybe next week, because I got a ton of those.
I do too. I love those.
The other daisy I have is the oxeye daisy, which is Leucanthemum vulgare.
Which means it's vulgar?
Which means, vulgare. I don't know if it's vulgar. It is not a native. It's from Europe.
Right.
But it casts seeds all over the garden, and so I'm not sure it's actually a perennial as much as it comes up from seed every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind that. It is so easy to pull out wherever you don't want it. But I do like to get those. They come up in the spring, and they'll probably start blooming in another couple of weeks. And then I just let them all bloom, and then I kind of go through and decide which ones aren't going to stay, and I cut them all back. And again, but they don't bloom all summer by any means.
No, they don't bloom very long at all. And neither does Eastern Daisy Fleabane, which is actually in a different, genus? Yeah, different genus, sorry. It's Erodgeron anise, which is interesting because that means that it's an annual, right?
Yes.
But what I read when I went and researched it is that it can also be a biennial, that it's not mm-hmm. always an annual. So I don't know. It's common fleabane. Almost everybody has it. And, you know.
I think there are a couple of species of fleabane out there. The eastern daisy fleabane is what we both have. And I had to chuckle one day because I got a British magazine, a British gardening magazine, and I opened it up, and it's like a centerfold picture of common fleabane, which just goes to show that, I mean, I've never planted fleabane, but it comes up in my yard.
Me too.
And, you know, to them, it's an exotic, one of those exotic North American plants.
Which they love. The English love the exotic American plants, and then they take them and they improve them, and then they send them back over here sometimes as improved ones. But yeah, this one, it grows all over my garden, and I just decide what I want to keep and what I don't want to keep. And while my honeybees are not really interested in it, small bees and small hoverflies are really, really fond of eastern fleabane.
Right. And eastern fleabane, if you don't let it go like completely wild, I think it's a nice mix in plant. It's not going to like knock your socks off when you walk out the door, but it kind of mixes in and adds a little bit of something to the perennial border. So I don't mind a little bit of it coming up and blooming.
No, me neither. And the truth is it comes or it blooms when other stuff isn't blooming. Like here, I don't know what it does in Indiana, but in Oklahoma, it comes up and blooms a little bit, like after the bulbs, but before, say, the roses have started. So my fleabane is almost at the end of its little life, and I'll just go out there and pull it up in handfuls.
And our fleabane is really just getting started, and we often have fleabane blooming all the way into fall.
Wow. Mine just kind of blooms and then it's done. But what? I pull it up, so it probably would bloom more. But I get tired of it and I want it to go away, so I pull it up. But it comes back every year from seed.
Right. You're never going to get rid of fleabane. Hey, I thought of another reason to grow daisies.
What's that?
It's the ultimate decision-making plant.
What does that mean?
Well, you've heard of people say, she loves me, she loves me not. And they pull off the petals. So you can say, so I should buy this plant. I shouldn't buy this plant. I should buy this plant. I shouldn't buy this plant. And you can just pull off the daisy petals, and then you end up with a decision.
The daisy petals that aren't even really petals. They're really sterile, ray, invulcral bracts, which we've talked about bracts before, especially when we were talking about poinsettias. The actual fertile flowers is that yellow disc in the center.
Yes. So anyway, so we're completely... So... pull off those sterile ray involucral bracts to make decisions. Why don't we just call them petals, D?
Yeah, let's just call them petals. Even though they really aren't petals, let's just call them petals. And and be glad that we have them for bees and hoverflies and all the other little creatures. Also, you came up with two other daisy-type plants. Chamomile was one of them.
Chamomile is an herb, obviously. I think people know that. But it has a daisy-like flower, and I've been trying to get this to naturalize in my back lawn because when you cut chamomile, it smells like apples.
And you call it chamomile, and I call it chamomile.
Right.
Potato. Okay.
Because I'm from Indiana and you're from Oklahoma.
Right. So we pronounce things differently a lot of the time. So what about Gerbera daisies?
Call them Gerber daisies. But yeah, Gerbera.
Okay.
Is the genus. But they're grown as an annual. Yeah. Nice big flower. Nice in a pot. Like most annuals, it benefits from cutting back the old flowers so that it'll produce new blooms. Otherwise, it just kind of peters out.
And here in Oklahoma, it looks really great in the garden center. And then you bring them home and they die within a month because it just is too hot for them. And people put them in pots. And in fact, my best friend, Amy, who called me this morning, she told me she had put Gerber daisies in her pots, and I just didn't say anything because I feel like I'm always shooting her down because she does things like that. And then she'll be really sad in about a month because she'll say, what happened to my Gerber daisies? And I'll say, well, they petered out because they just don't like the hot weather here.
Right. They don't like the hot weather here. I think the way to use Gerber daisies is to buy them in bloom at the garden center and then use them as a centerpiece for about a month and then let them go. Let them go to the compost bin.
Yeah, just send them to the great compost bin in the sky.
Yes.
Okay, and also let's talk quickly about, well, I don't want to talk about sunflowers right now. Let's just say sunflowers are also daisy-like in experience, in appearance, because they are part of that same family. But we will talk about sunflowers much more later because I love sunflowers.
Yes, and we're both going to be, I haven't even sown the seeds for sunflowers yet. It's far too early here.
I have not sown them yet either. It's time for me to do it here, but I just got my beds cleared out.
There you go. You better get on it, Dee.
Okay, I'll get with that, Carol, as soon as I get off of here. All right, let's go on to our vegetables, shall we?
Well, before we go on to our vegetable, let's discuss something that happens to gardeners in the spring.
Okay, what's that?
Some gardeners get really anxious about getting everything planted, and they're afraid if they don't get things planted just as soon as possible, it's going to ruin the whole season. And I tell people, like my sister, relax. There is still time. It is early May. You do not have to have everything in the ground here by Mother's Day. That's too early for some things around here. So I tell people, if gardening has you all in knots and really anxious, you're doing it wrong.
I completely agree. I mean, I garden a really big garden, and if I sat around and worried about all the things that I've still got to do, I would be like immobile. I would be frozen and not be able to finish them. So what I do is I just try to take it one little garden room at a time or one little bed at a time, and I just do the best I can and move on. I did hire some help, too. So I finally found two ladies that can actually weed and not weed out my plants, my good plants. So, yeah. I paid for some help this year.
That's good. Good. Good, good, good. Okay, now we can move on to a vegetable this week.
Okay, you ready for our vegetable?
Summer squash.
Yes, summer squash, which is delicious.
Yeah, I think squash is good, but I don't think it has much taste to it.
Well, you don't fry it. If you fry it, it's really good.
Well, I don't fry my squash because I'm frying my eggplant, which is really good fried. But we're not talking about eggplant. Let's talk about squash. What's your favorite variety?
My favorite variety of squash. Well, really, my favorite variety is yellow straight neck, but that's also a favorite variety of squash bugs in Oklahoma. And we've talked before, you and I by ourselves, that we do not have the same experience with squash bugs. You do not fight them like I do.
No, I do not.
So what I grow instead of my favorite variety of summer squash, I grow yellow crookneck and I grow gray zucchini because these are both more resistant to squash bugs. That doesn't mean that you won't get squash bugs because in Oklahoma, I can pretty much promise you, you will. And you can use diatomaceous earth around the bottom of the plant that it kind of dries out the nymphs, but it will not kill the adults. So you have to put down a piece of board or something and like trap them underneath and check your squash plants every day. And here's the deal. Some years I don't grow squash, especially if I'm going to be gone in June because I can't keep up with it. So what I do is I go to the farmer's market and I buy organic squash from the farmers. Yay, farmers.
So I grow a great round variety called cue ball, which is a light green and it looks like a cue ball.
I've seen it. I've grown it.
And I talked to the breeder of that, and he said it would never show up in a grocery store because it has a really thin skin. And so easily damaged, easily nicked. I have seen it at our farmer's market. But I think it's one that if you want to grow squash, grow the varieties that you wouldn't normally encounter in the grocery store. And there's some really good ones out there, like cue ball. And you don't even have to skin it to eat it.
No, you just eat the skin. And you know what? I don't skin, well, okay, on the crookneck, because sometimes the skin gets kind of thick, but not if I harvest it young. If I harvest it young, it's still thin, and I don't peel any of my summer squash. But I agree, cue ball is a very thin skin, and it is a delicious little variety. However, squash bugs also like it. So people in Oklahoma and Texas, just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, I peel squash if it's older or if I don't know if it was grown organically and if it was sprayed or something, I go ahead and peel those just to, because it's hard to, if you just scrub them, you'll end up messing up the peel anyway. So I peel them.
Yeah, that's true. One more thing. What you said something about grow the varieties that you know, you can't buy in the store. I think that holds true of almost all stuff that we grow in our vegetable gardens, wouldn't you?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that a lot. Have you heard of growing the squash on hills in your garden?
Yeah, I've always grown it on hills for the drainage, but you know what? You don't have to.
You don't really have to, but I do. I kind of make a little mound, and when it sounds like a hill, it sounds like, you know, we're getting earth-moving equipment out there and making it like a downward slope, but it's actually just make a little mound and then plant on top of the mound. And the other thing I read years ago is if you plant radishes around your squash, it'll keep away the squash vine borers.
Uh-huh. Do you think it works?
And I don't really have problems with squash vine borer, but I don't know if it's because of the radishes or just because I am living a charmed life.
I don't have too much trouble with squash vine borers. Occasionally I get them on older plants. But I've heard the radish idea too, but here's the deal. Even if it doesn't keep away squash vine borers, if you let it go to flower, then you'll attract pollinators to your garden. And what does squash need? It needs pollinators.
Pollinators. Yes. Squash has a male flower and a female flower. And so you need a bee to go to the male flower and pick up the pollen and then visit the female flower to pollinate it.
And I actually have pictures that I posted on my blog some time ago about how to identify a female flower and a male flower and how to pollinate your own squash. Because some people really don't have pollinators, and so they weren't getting any squash, especially when you first plant it. So you can actually hand pollinate it if you want to, but now I don't have a problem with that because I have honeybees.
There you go. So the other problem with squash sometimes is... you think you've found all of it and you've harvested it, and the next day you go out and there's a squash that's as big as your arm out there that is really not good for anything.
Especially zucchini. Yeah, zucchini is the worst for that. And that's when people start leaving it on your doorstep.
No. I haven't been to your house yet, have I?
I have a neighbor. I have this sweet neighbor. He's been my neighbor for 30 years, and he gives me baseball-sized zucchini every single year. He drives up in his truck, and he hands me a grocery bag full of it. He won't listen to this podcast, so I'm just going to tell people that I compost it, because you can only eat so much zucchini bread, and I have my own zucchini.
Right.
So I don't need his baseball size, but he's very proud of it. He thinks that you're supposed to grow them that big.
You are not.
When should you actually... I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. So when should you actually harvest squash? What size should it be?
Well, I don't like to get more than about 6 inches long. And just as the bloom, the petals of the bloom are starting to fall off the bottom of the squash, it's about the time. Because we should tell people the squash blossom is actually edible.
And oh my gosh, squash blossoms are so unbelievably good. I mean, they are so good. And you know what? You get a lot more male flowers than you have female flowers. So you can harvest a bunch of those male flowers.
You can.
And you can stuff them with cheese. There's all kinds of things you can do with them. I like them. I don't eat them fried very often, but once a year I harvest them and I fry them in kind of a beer batter. And oh my gosh, it's so good.
Yeah, I've eaten them once. I had a coworker and he always begged me to bring him squash blossoms, and he passed away, and so may he rest in peace. I can't really think about my squash blossoms without thinking about this guy. He's a nice guy.
Oh, that's a sweet story.
So, and I do tell people, speaking of composting the big zucchini, I tell people, ultimately, that's why you have a compost bin, people. A place to hide the overgrown zucchini.
Exactly. That's a good place for it.
So, and I, in my second book, Homegrown and Handpicked, I talked about how to get rid of extra summer squash, and, you know, there's the old trick of leaving it in unlocked cars at the parking lot, putting it...
Well, that's rude.
Putting it on the doorstep of the neighbor, but don't hang around. Ring the bell and run. So you don't want them to know it was you.
Or you could be like my neighbor who thinks that that's the size they grow.
Oh, no way.
He's really proud of them. He really is, and that's okay. It makes him happy, and he's about 85 now, so I'm really okay with it. I take him with great gratitude, and then I go put him in the compost bin.
That's nice.
But back when I had chickens, I fed it to the chickens.
Oh, the chickens probably would gobble it up.
They loved it. So should we talk a little bit about winter squash and how it's different and why it's a little bit different?
Sure. Winter squash, summer squash. People don't want to know what's the difference. Winter squash, just basically think of it, it has a tougher skin and it's able to be stored for winter eating, and it can be stored. It doesn't have to be refrigerated, just kept kind of away from moisture. You don't want it to rot. But right. Acorn squash, Hubbard squash, butternut, spaghetti squash, those are all winter squashes. Also good, but the skin is tough and you would never eat the skin.
Right. And spaghetti squashes, I've actually grown spaghetti squash several times and it was really good. But here's the thing, it didn't taste any different in my garden than it did from the store. So it takes up a lot of room. And some of those squashes, they do take up a lot of room in my garden, and it's a small garden. I should say my vegetable garden's a small garden. My other garden's not so small. So the other, besides squash bugs and squash vine borers, powdery mildew can be a bit of a problem with squash, but I'll be honest, it's not a problem here. At least not for me.
It can be a problem here, and it just shows up as a grayish cast on the leaves. It doesn't really hurt anything. It doesn't really hurt the vigor of the plant that much. I would tell people the same thing. When you pull your spent zucchini squash, your spent summer squash plants, they are probably harboring squash bug eggs, squash vine borers, powdery mildew. Send them to the trash, not the compost pile.
Right.
Unless your pile gets super hot.
Right. And so as for pollinators, we talked about that just a little bit. In addition to honeybees and other bumblebees also pollinate squash, there's a native bee that pollinates squash, and it's called the squash bee. And it's called Pepinopus prunosa, and it's native to North America. And so they're a little bit hard to tell apart from honeybees, but they're a bit more striped, and I actually get them in my garden. So I think that's pretty cool. And you can encourage them by, you know, planting other pollinator plants too. So I was trying to see if there's any other thing that you could do. Okay, so if you want to get down close and see the squash bee, they have a much more distinct light-colored stripe on their abdomen and combs rather than a pollen basket on their hind legs for carrying pollen. But here's the thing, I'm not going to get down on my tummy and look at the squash and bother that squash bee. Are you?
I have to laugh, Dee, because I can just see you kneeling down looking in a squash flower at a bee and wondering if it's a squash bee or a regular honeybee.
No, I don't think so. I don't have time for that. But guess what? Squash bees have a unique symbiotic relationship with squash, and they feed exclusively on the pollen of the cucurbit family. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
There you go. Squash bees.
It is interesting. I did not know that. I'm just happy to have any bee come and pollinate them. And I'm glad to know there's different types.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. It's kind of cool that they pollinate squash and other cucurbits. Although honeybees do, and so do bumblebees. But anyway.
So when we get to our dirt, are we ready for dirt now?
I'm ready for dirt if you're ready.
Okay. Here's the dirt. So last week, remember, I was in a bookstore. And I saw a book, and I thought, oh, I think Dee would like this. So I texted you a picture of the book, and you texted back and said, I got that one. I just got that one.
Pre-ordered.
And anyway, Queen Spotting by Hillary...
Kearney? Yeah, Kearney.
Kearney.
Mm-hmm. She's a beekeeper in California.
And I knew when I saw this book that you would have this book, or you would want this book.
Yeah.
If you didn't know about it. What is fascinating about this book, Dee?
Okay, so queen spotting is something that Hillary is a pretty famous beekeeper on Instagram, and she manages hives in California for several different customers and her own hives. And she started this, and I, for the life of me right now, I cannot think of what her... Oh, Girl Next Door Honey. It just... dawn on me. I mean, it's on the front of the book, which helps too. Anyway, Queen Spotting is the name of the book, and it says, meet the remarkable queen bee and discover the drama at the heart of the hive. But what makes this book so much fun is that Hillary started doing this thing on her Instagram account where she would post a picture of a frame of bees. Frames are those pieces of well, it's honeycomb that fit down the frames that they make the honeycomb on the frames. They fit down in your beehive. And so when you pull them out, if you see a bunch of bees in an Instagram picture, that's almost always a beekeeper showing you a frame. So she started doing this thing with all of her followers, and she has a lot of followers, and it was called queen spotting. And she would have you spot the queen in her picture. And when you spotted it, you were supposed to show a bee. And it became really, really popular. And the reason she did this was for educational purposes. If you are a beekeeper, you need to be able to tell the difference between your queen and your other bees. And that should sound really easy, because bees, queen bees, are bigger than the other bees. They have a long abdomen so that they can lay eggs, because they have tons of eggs. But it's not as easy as you might think. And so this book, beekeepers need to know the queen, because they need to make sure that their hives are not queenless, or that if there are new queens in the hive, if they haven't mated yet. It's just complicated. And it helps you to know if your colony is queen right. Because all beekeepers want colonies that are queen right. The queen, although she is not the towering monarch that people think she is really important to the hive. She lays all the eggs in the hive for the colony, and she also passes on her pheromone to all the other honeybees so that they know that she is theirs. So you have to be able to spot her. So she started doing this thing, and in this book, there's a whole bunch of information about bees, which is really good, and written in a very direct kind of way. And then there are 48 queen spotting challenges, and they start out easy and they get hard. And if you got a hive that is full of bees, I can tell you the queen is not always easy to find.
Well, I've never looked in a hive like that, so I wouldn't know how to spot a queen. But it sounds like that would be a book, if I was wanting to figure out more about bees, that would be the book to get.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good book anyway, whether you're a beekeeper or not. It's just a good book. It's a pretty book. It has great information about all different bees, and I learned some new things about drones, which are the male bees. And I think it'd be a great one for kids that are about 12 years old and up, because I think it would be like Where's Waldo? They could look for the bees. So it's kind of fun.
I was wondering about kids, if that would be for kids. Although, you know, we're like kids at heart. I would like a book where I go page after page and try to find the queen. That would be fun.
Well, it is fun. And I've found about half of them, and then I stopped myself so I didn't keep looking at them. Because I wanted to get, you know how you want to savor a book and hold on to it? That's what I want to do with this book. It's that much fun to read. And for example, she showed in here, you know, have you ever thought about how bees make wax for their honeycomb?
Uh-uh.
I didn't until I became a beekeeper. Well, they have this little organ on the bottom of their tummies, and it emits wax. How is that even possible? It's back to that mystery.
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know.
Mysteries of the universe, Carol.
Well, we will definitely put a link to this book, and we encourage our listeners to go to your independent bookstore and ask them to get you a copy of Queen Spotting.
Right. And if you can't, just buy it off Amazon with our link. That's okay, too.
And with that, I think that concludes everything, Dee.
I think that concludes today, too. If you guys are trying to send us questions or comments, send them to thegardenangelus@gmail.com, or you can comment on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. And we try really hard to update you guys with the best information we have. And we'll even go out and look for it if we don't know the answer.
That's right. And one other thing we should remind people is, if you haven't done so, go back and listen to Weeding with the Garden Angelus, which is our weeding episode designed to inspire you to do a better, faster job of weeding in your own garden.
It was fun to do, and we hope you enjoy it too.
Right. We want to do for weeding with our podcast what Jane Fonda did for exercising back in 1982 when she came out with her workout video.
And we promise it's not as hard.
No, we made it fun. We made weeding fun, Dee.
We darn sure did our best, that's for sure. It was great chatting with
that's
you over
right.
the garden gate today.
It was great chatting with you, and we'll be back next week, same time, same station.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.